This is The Full Story. I'm Tom Kuser. A new school year has begun, and it's the third year students are learning while living with COVID-19. Quite a bit has changed since the lockdown in Connecticut. Educators and students are back in schools, masks are now optional, and vaccines are available. But the effects of the pandemic linger. New data released by the Connecticut State Department of Education reveals how much learning students lost due to COVID-19 and the shutdown. The report compared student performance on standardized tests between the 2018-2019 school year and the 2021-2022 school year. It shows there have been some academic gains, but student performance still has not reached pre-pandemic levels statewide. The data also show that students in urban districts were impacted more by learning loss than those in suburban and wealthy districts. So what does this mean for students and educators, and what's being done to close this pandemic learning gap? Joining me now is Dr. Donald Paris. He's been a Connecticut-based educational consultant since 2005, and Dr. Paris has also been an associate professor of special education at Southern Connecticut State University in New Haven for 37 years. And he's prepared more than 6,600 teachers for their field. And Dr. Paris joins us via Zoom. Dr. Paris, welcome back to The Full Story.
Good to see you, Tom.
You've had an opportunity to take a look at the Department of Education's recent study?
Yes, I did. I actually reviewed it yesterday.
Anything in there that surprised you?
I sense that we are going to see a big concern about students returning who haven't mastered the basic skills that they once had prior to the pandemic. That's going to be universal across the state. And unfortunately, I think there's a growing portion of students with special needs, students from lower socioeconomic communities, and maybe even the ELL population that are going to struggle as the new year begins.
Some of the details, as quoted in the Hartford Courant about the State Education Department report, student achievement has yet to rebound from pandemic learning loss. Nearly 89% of Connecticut school districts seeing their average student performance decrease from pre-pandemic levels in at least one of three academic categories, 5% in English language arts, 7% in math, nearly 4% in science performance. So as we mentioned, you've consulted for quite some time and trained literally thousands of teachers in Connecticut. With all of that experience and what you've seen, have you ever seen this kind of a decline before in your career, or this sort of combination of factors?
I'm going to argue no. And I do think a lot of it has to do with attendance. I know the reports suggested that. So we have, unfortunately, a number of students that did not have access to home-based computers and virtual learning. But I also think even from last year, 2021-22, attendance was a significant issue. We've also had staff turnover because of the pandemic. People have retired and or have not entered the field. So I think that's caused a little bit of concern. And I think looking forward to this year, all the districts are going to have to focus on in-person learning. They're going to have to create what I call a whole child school climate. We have to look at children holistically because of all their social emotional needs, trauma, disruptive family environments, and again, lack of mastery of basic skills.
And what does that mean, more specifically, looking at the child holistically?
Yeah, I think you can't just assume students are going to enter school every day, regardless, by the way, of their backgrounds, and have like this focus, this attention, the motivation to learn. I call it readiness to learn. That's my general feeling about it. And I think teachers and the whole community of schools have to adjust to that factor now. So you can't just assume that a student is going to be motivated to learn simply because they're sitting there for 6 hours a day. We're going to have to address those underlying causes to make it work more effectively.
And what about the teachers? It's normal for a teacher to face different levels of learning and different levels of readiness when a new school year begins under ordinary circumstances.
Right.
As the study pointed out, and as just anecdotally many people have talked about, things are very, very different right now, even going into this second, pretty much the second year where kids are back in the classroom as opposed to remote or hybrid learning. So teachers are facing even more levels and maybe more disparate levels of differences in student readiness. How
totally
can they prepare
accurate.
For that? How do they prepare
yeah.
for that?
No,
or can
yeah,
they?
That's a fantastic point. Let's argue this point quickly.
Hmm.
We know the state's hiring literally hundreds of new teachers, in quotes. So they're entering their districts respectively as we speak. I'm saying this casually. I don't mean to make it be too critical. A lot of teacher training is not giving teachers the breadth and scope of strategies to cope with these needier, less developed students in that sense. So if it were my scenario, I'd like to focus on the teacher's personal development, what I call mental health, their stability in the classroom. They're the most important link in the whole system. If we can strengthen their engagement with students and their mastery of themselves, you often find academic performance improves dramatically.
Would you describe that kind of an approach with teachers, like you did with students, a holistic approach to training teachers?
Yeah, absolutely. They need training in differentiated instruction, which is a cliche at this point. We're going to offer them some training in technology, all these different curricula strategies like Google Slides and all these internet resources. But I still feel overall the character of the teacher is probably the most critical factor in the whole equation. So if I were working with teachers, I would overemphasize their personal adjustment, which will then transfer immediately to the student's sense of confidence, respect, and commitment to the teacher's instructional expertise.
Another point the Hartford Courant made was they talked about the Connecticut State Department of Education allocating more than $82 million in funding for, and again quoting here, additional after-school and summer enrichment programs, professional development, school mental health resources, support for students experiencing homelessness, and services for students with disabilities. This kind of after-school help, these kinds of after-school programs, do these help teachers at all? It's directed towards students, but does it also have sort of a side effect, although that's probably not the right term, but does it help teachers as well as these students get this help and then come back to the classroom?
I think immediately you could argue the after-school programs validate the importance of thinking of the child holistically, as we mentioned 5 minutes ago.
Mm.
I'm going to argue absolutely, especially if the teachers develop more interpersonal relationships with their students. Think of a middle or high school teacher. They see the students 50 minutes, roughly. Next class arrives, and they repeat the process for the entire day. The middle school age group is remarkably sensitive to their own development. It's an emotionally, physically awkward stage. So anything that develops that bond, that connection, will have immediate results, and it will empower the teachers to have more confidence with those students in the classroom.
So after 3 years of each year being unique when it comes to how students and teachers interacted, how education was dealt with in schools all over the country, not just Connecticut and New York. What's your perspective on that? Do you think things are heading in a positive direction? Is the system recovering from the pandemic at this point?
I would say, without question, the answer is yes. And you get a sense of it with the amount of resources being available now in various districts, like, for example, hiring a speech therapist or a school psychologist. We have much more perspective on how to teach students. We have a huge array of strategies and techniques. So I would argue emphatically, yes. I think the equation to me, though, is somewhat basic. We have a generally needier group of children entering all of our schools. We have to train and embellish the teacher's skills so we can at least parallel or connect with that kind of differential between us and them, in quotes. We need to find more people with compassion, empathy, ability to relate to others. I think that's kind of a missing element in the teachers today versus like 30 or 40 years ago. And now we have a double negative. We have fewer people coming into the field. As you know, the shortage is absolutely critical. And I think people are now going to other professions that we would have absorbed, as I said, in the past, and we're missing some of that expertise and talent.
I want to mention, too, that on your website, you have a teacher mental health webinar, and perhaps that's a very important factor here as you're talking about not only fewer people getting into the profession, but people who are leaving under various circumstances. One of those circumstances certainly must be just the incredible pressure that teachers feel these days. How important is really maintaining and paying attention to your own mental health as a teacher?
Oh, my goodness. It's fundamental. It's absolutely ground zero. There's no question about it. The training that I'm providing, it's going to be a little bit more slanted to the newer beginning teachers, is to nurture that sense of your own potential. Because again, I don't think teacher training emphasizes it enough. We get into our jobs, we're harried most of the day with all kinds of responsibilities and pressures, which, by the way, it begins from the administrator on throughout the whole school. And that's why I mentioned that cultural idea about establishing a holistic mentality. But the actual training is all about developing preventative and proactive coping strategies, particularly if you're dealing with students with a lot of social behavioral kind of stressors. And by the way, the research says and the surveys indicate the primary reason teachers are leaving the field is somewhat linked to their mental health stress.
What kind of work are you doing right now? Are you hearing from school districts around the state that want the training, want the help?
The answer is yes, and I appreciate their response to my inquiries. Just using a couple quick examples, I've worked with two districts, one, quote, urban, one called suburban. The new teachers had roughly the same questions about student conduct, the diversity of student learning, their resources, obviously. And I think, again, I emphasize to them that what I call the self part of who you are, so that if we can nurture that, they're going to have a much, much greater potential to cope and survive, in quotes, the first year. And I would say this to anyone listening to our broadcast, don't be naive that a lot of teachers are there and need this type of support. I still feel a lot of districts are kind of minimizing it. But the data suggests otherwise. This is one of the prime reasons we can't sustain longevity, and especially in the young teachers. They're lasting 2 or 3 years, then they move to another community thinking it's going to be dramatically better. And unfortunately, it often evens out over time.
Were you at all surprised that you were getting similar questions, or teachers were expressing similar concerns, be it the urban or suburban district? It was pretty much similar kinds of problems?
Yeah, I would think somewhat from the suburban communities. But again, I think the trend is obvious, where there's just more stress across the whole community of educators, regardless of your location. And I don't want people to feel naive that this will be neutralized because the students are going to be high functioning and capable and so on. There's a myth in there that many of them will have underlying issues that are just as severe as the students who live in the, quote, urban communities.
Dr. Donald Paris is a Connecticut-based educational consultant. He's been doing that for many years. He's also a trainer of literally thousands of teachers for their field. Dr. Paris, thanks again for joining us on The Full Story. We appreciate it.
Oh, it's been my distinct pleasure. Thank you much, Tom.
Last year, the Connecticut RISE Network in New Haven released a report on the impact remote learning had on Connecticut high schools. RISE is a community of educators working together to help students in Connecticut achieve success in high school and beyond. And back then, we spoke with their executive director, Emily Palin, and she joins us again today on the phone. Ms. Palin, welcome back to The Full Story.
Thank you so much for having me.
And please, first off, remind us about the RISE Network and the work that you do.
Absolutely. So the Connecticut RISE Network is a Connecticut-based nonprofit organization. We work together to advance a shared mission of ensuring that all of our students graduate from high school with a meaningful and personalized plan and the skills and confidence to achieve their college and career goals. And we have the privilege of partnering with public schools and districts around the state to facilitate these improvement networks where school communities are working together to use data to learn and improve. And we share this commitment of closing opportunity gaps and helping all of our students successfully transition to, through, and beyond high school.
There's been a lot of discussion and speculation and studying about what happened during the pandemic as far as students and learning goes, some pointing to a potential learning loss. Can you explain what that means? What is a learning loss?
Right. So I think it's important to sort of remind ourselves of what the arc of the past 2.5 years have looked like. So during the 2019-20 school year, that was the year where we were first affected by the pandemic. And the final third of that school year was entirely remote for all of our students. The following year, 2020-21, students and families had the opportunity to engage in remote learning once again, entirely online, or they could elect to participate in hybrid learning, where for about different schools did this differently. About 2 days a week, students were in person, and then the balance of the days of the week, they were remote. And then this past school year, 2021-22, most schools were back to more of the normal configuration of 5 days of in-person learning per week, though we were certainly still navigating COVID outbreaks and different new protocols that schools had to put in place. So I think, understandably, the past 2+ years have looked radically different than any form of schooling that we knew previous to that. And while students, families, and educators have worked mightily to adapt to very changing circumstances, I think it's fair to say that teaching and learning has looked very different. And in the state's data that they released this past week regarding assessment data for 21-22, we saw some of that learning loss where some of the assessment data shows some declines that we now need to navigate and figure out how we bounce back from a challenging period to get back to an upward trajectory in the data.
Could you talk a bit about how that's measured? You talked about really three or at least two very unique learning years for mm-hmm. kids at pretty much every level of school. Given that it was a unique experience twice, how do you measure what's missing, what was lost, where kids should be at this point starting the 2022-23 school year?
Right. Like so many things these days, I feel like the short answer is it's complicated. So even in the data that the state released this past week, you see a bit of a gap in the data. So there were data from 2018-19 prior to the pandemic, and then the recent data that they released for this past school year, 21-22. So there are a couple of years where we don't have assessment data, and the state was not publishing that end-of-year accountability data because there was an acknowledgement that these were very atypical school years, and A, could we facilitate the assessments in a high-quality way, and B, was it fair to, I think, share the data in an apples-to-apples comparison sort of way? So now is our first real high-stakes window into how are students doing through the pandemic. And something I would add there that's important is for us as an organization, the RISE Network, we partner with 9 high schools across 8 different districts in the state. Through data sharing agreements that we have with our partner districts, we have been monitoring student progress throughout the pandemic so that we can provide that personalized, equitable support for our students. And we really saw the most challenging stretch was during the 2020-21 school year, where students were entirely remote or hybrid in their learning. And the piece that leaves me very encouraged is that as we are now looking at the 21-22 school year, where students were back in person 5 days a week, we are already seeing across RISE Network high schools nearly universal gains between that two-year period. So while the state is just releasing their first wave of pandemic data, as we've been following this progress over the past two plus years, the trend line is actually far more optimistic in our partner schools, where, yes, there's a lot of work left to do, but we are certainly bouncing back from what I hope was the most challenging year and really starting to reestablish what our trend lines will be moving forward and a vision for success as we continue to navigate still somewhat unpredictable sort of conditions in schools.
The state study this year did show students were recovering, but rather slowly. And you're saying that what you're seeing is perhaps something that's happening even more quickly?
That's right, that there was a real change between the 2020-21 school year, that remote and hybrid school year, and this past school year. Okay. And even there, it's important to remember that this past school year presented new challenges. We had students and educators coming back to school for the first time 5 days a week and relearning some of those basic routines and behavior expectations, resetting a healthy and positive climate 5 days a week was challenging for the first half of this past school year, in addition to reestablishing some of those teaching and learning tools as we continue to have students and educators themselves who were either navigating COVID or on quarantine. So this past school year was not easy either, but it leaves me feeling very encouraged that there was that year-over-year improvement that we saw within the RISE Network, and it leaves me feeling incredibly optimistic as we head into this new school year, which I hope will present some decrease in some of the curveballs that our school communities have had to navigate, while also being incredibly real about the work that is ahead. And I truly appreciate the state's transparency in showing some of the performance trends, particularly in separating out our high-need students and those without high needs, that really helps to bring much-needed attention to opportunity gaps that still exist for our historically marginalized students and really encourage all of us to put our resources and attention where they're most needed through a really equitable approach.
The state study, did show that students in urban school districts are making a somewhat slower recovery from learning loss during the pandemic than those in suburban or in more affluent districts. Does this reflect what the state has found? Does this reflect what RISE has found in its own research?
So the state released a really interesting new dashboard that helps us to look at the trends of prior to the pandemic, and then with this most recent release of data, what sort of changes are we seeing across schools and across districts? And one thing that was a real standout to me and interesting in looking at the data, it seemed like sort of on the x-axis of that dashboard, whether students were far to the left, meaning they started prior to the pandemic with some lower performance indicators, or whether they were further to the right, they were a higher performing school or district prior to the pandemic, there was nearly universal drops that schools and districts saw prior to the pandemic and in the most recent data. So while I'm not sure that I would necessarily conclude that urban school districts saw larger drops, I do think the data very clearly show that our high-need students, our historically marginalized students, did see more significant drops in the performance data and really the importance of, again, shining a light on opportunity gaps and the widespread effects that the pandemic has had, particularly on some of our higher-need students and families.
I'm talking with Emily Palin, the executive director of the Connecticut RISE Network. Another thing that you found, that RISE found, was that students enrolled in remote learning were less likely to be on track to advance to the next grade level compared to those who chose a hybrid model of learning. Now that students are back in the classroom, and have been for much of last year, in addition to going into this year. Has that situation improved?
Yes, absolutely. So we, through our work, partnering closely with high schools and high school-aged youth, really focus heavily on promoting on-track achievement, on-time graduation, and then post-secondary readiness and success for our students. Because we know that the research shows whether or not a student is on track in grade 9, that's the best predictor of whether or not they will graduate on time. And we have been tracking all of those indicators throughout the pandemic, as you described, and we saw challenges during the hybrid remote school year, but we're really, really excited that we saw nearly all schools and subgroups show improvements this year. And some subgroups and some schools actually have already rebounded to their pre-pandemic rates. So again, while the statewide data shares some signs of progress and some more troubling data points that require our urgent attention, we are, within our network, feeling very optimistic and very encouraged as we kick off this new school year.
We're going to be talking during the program today also about the challenges that teachers face in having to handle this different level of achievement depending on how students were learning over the past couple of years. But I'm wondering, from your perspective, what do you see as really one of the or some of the biggest problems that teachers are going to have to deal with? Some students are coming back from hybrid, some from completely remote learning, and coming into the same grade at really different levels.
That's absolutely true. And given that we are now officially in September and most schools are back to school or coming back to school this week and next, really, I think the importance of strong attendance and engagement at the beginning of the school year, we know those healthy habits and being connected to the school community really has this powerful ripple effect on academic achievement and student social and emotional well-being. So really, I believe that needs to be a strong emphasis, and I know it is for our school communities and families around the state, the importance of going to school and building those positive connections with adults, with peers, with clubs and activities in the school community. I think all of us have felt the effects of the pandemic over the past couple of years of some disconnection, and now is really an opportunity to reconnect, build that healthy attendance. And then the importance of using data for our educators and making sure our educators have the tools and resources to do what was previously a complicated job and arguably it has become even more complicated, to understand what are the unique strengths that each of our students are bringing to the classroom, as well as some of their unique needs, and how to provide that differentiated and equitable support for our students has never been more important than it is right now. And the last piece I would say is just keeping all of our stakeholders motivated and engaged. It's been encouraging over the past couple of weeks to see all of the images and videos of students and educators coming back to school, and we need to maintain that positivity and momentum for our students, our educators, our families, our community partners. You know, the assessment data certainly presents, again, signs of progress, some troubling data, and we need to balance being very honest with ourselves about the data and the work ahead while staying really optimistic and moving forward, and ensuring that our educators know they have our support. We know that they are working incredibly hard to meet the needs of their individual students, and we need to spotlight and celebrate their progress and what's working in classrooms and schools across the state, and that's certainly something that we strive to do within the RISE Network.
The RISE report last year did make several recommendations to policymakers. Were any of those put into action?
Yes, we continue to see really vibrant conversations happening across schools and districts around topics such as grading, staffing, scheduling, and I think the through line and theme of all of that is this willingness to be flexible and to reimagine a policy or a practice that maybe has been in place for years. Is it working for our students, or is it working now? And if not, how can we think differently about that, and how can we give voice to all of our students and families and educators in helping to shape what comes next? And I do think that this point that you raised around what it will take moving forward, it's going to take everyone's collective effort and the willingness to reinvent and reimagine while also knowing the work is far from done. And we have had the privilege of having new pandemic relief funding, but we know those funds will sunset in the years ahead. So we need to figure out how to make resources that are badly needed in the schools and classrooms sustainable and enduring, and how we support a culture of learning and improvement. It's been so encouraging to see folks thinking outside the box. How do we continue that mentality moving forward? And how can we continue to use data, yes, for purposes like last week, sharing accountability data, but equally, if not more important, looking at data on a regular basis in real time to pinpoint where are our students thriving and where do they need additional support, and then providing that support. So there is more work for all of us to do in the days, weeks, months ahead, but I continue to be encouraged by really this positive momentum that we have seen this past school year in particular.
Emily Palin is the executive director of Connecticut Rise Network, based in New Haven. Thank you so much for joining us again here on The Full Story. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom.
Now that the new school year has begun, are schools prepared to deal with the pandemic learning gap? With me now is Michael Testani. He's the superintendent of Bridgeport Public Schools, which has about 19,200 students, similar in size to the Hartford system, the two biggest systems in Connecticut. Superintendent Testani joins us via Zoom. Welcome to The Full Story.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate being on.
Certainly. How have the past 2 years affected the students in the Bridgeport Public School System, would you say?
Well, I think, it's well documented that children have been impacted by what happened during the pandemic when it came to abruptly closing in the spring of 2020. Bridgeport did open to full in-person learning that fall. However, parents did have the option of keeping their children at home, which initially many did. And slowly we got a return back to full in-person learning. But, you know, kids are suffering not only academically, but there are kids that have been impacted more than others when it comes to social emotional learning. Those are some things that we're trying to deal with. And as everyone's well aware, it's also impacted staffing, not just here in Bridgeport, but across the country. So there's a lot of things that have impacted public education in particular as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic.
So does the data that was released not long ago by the State Department of Education reflect what have observed in the schools that you oversee?
Yeah, I mean, the data is interesting. It needs to be broken down into more specifics. When you look at test scores in particular, we have to make sure that we're comparing the same group of students that tested pre-pandemic to post-pandemic. Look how those comparisons measure up. There's been a lot of movement throughout our district in particular, kids that have left, kids that have entered from other districts, other states, other countries in particular. So I think it's really important to look at comparison data and then start making decisions from there as to what the impact was and which kids we need to focus on in particular to try to get them the help they need and the support so that they can catch up to their peers.
Are those more specific breakdowns something you can do locally in the Bridgeport system, or have you asked the state to get deeper into the weeds when it comes to the kind of comparisons that you're looking at?
Yeah, we have some folks here in the district that are able to break down that data more specifically, more granular. And then it's really getting that information to the hands of our building leaders, our principals and assistant principals, so they can have those conversations and work with our staff, our teachers, and the folks that are having that day-to-day interaction with students to impact education here in the district. But we're looking at this more broadly. we started pre-pandemic, but we've really ramped it up in the last year plus on looking at just instruction across the district and providing all kids at all times with high quality instruction. I think that's the long-term solution to this problem, is really making sure that every child is receiving high quality instruction each and every day in the classroom.
Is there another kind or extra types of support that you think the students need, since I'm sure that aiming for top quality education is something that that you do all the time?
Yeah, I mean, we've provided some extra staffing with the funding that we've been given from the federal government through ARP-ESSER to try to really meet the needs of the kids that have been impacted more by the pandemic than others. But also to provide other opportunities for students that have not been maybe impacted academically so much, but give them opportunities for enrichment and so that they can continue to thrive as well. So it's not only about the learning loss, but it's also continuing to make sure that we pay attention to our students that are thriving, and we want to continue to give them those opportunities to reach their full potential as well.
I would imagine that's quite a challenge to have to keep tabs on all the different types of needs that the students have, from those with the largest learning gaps to those, like you just described, who did pretty well during the pandemic and are looking for opportunities to advance even quicker.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge responsibility, but it's one we don't take lightly, and that we make sure that we try to pay attention to all the programs that we are trying to implement and provide students. I think the biggest challenge for us, and I think other larger districts, is really making sure that we can do our best to fill all the staffing needs, because those students then will not have the same opportunities to accelerate and catch up or accelerate and reach their potential if they don't have, you know, a certified instructor in the classroom for the entire school year. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, causes me, you know, a lot of anxiety, is that we do have classrooms here in Bridgeport and throughout the country that do not have a certified teacher in front of the kids on September 7th, you know, 2022. And that to me is disturbing.
So the staffing needs, you would say that's probably the biggest, should we say, resource gap that you're facing right now?
Right now, that is the biggest issue that we face, is the staffing needs. I hate to say, I think we're doing pretty well compared to some of our neighboring districts that are in similar demographics in the state of Connecticut and in the country. But even one teacher that's not in front of a classroom, to me, is unacceptable. So it doesn't give me any comfort to say we're doing better than this district or better than that district. It really, it's troubling, and we're doing everything we can, but unfortunately, the folks are not available. This is really a national crisis that I think we need to look at immediately as a nation if we're going to address these issues before kids continue to suffer more than they've already had.
What are you hearing from the teachers who are on the job in your system about what they hope to see happen this new school year? And I'd like to ask you the same question about parents and students. What do they hope to see in this new school year?
Well, I think, you know, there is a sense and a feeling more of normalcy as opposed to last year, where there still was a lot of uncertainty. And I think that's the hope, is that we can maintain a consistent school year without any disruptions, you know, especially as we get into the fall and winter months, that there won't be this level of anxiety around, is this pandemic going to rear its head again?
How long do you think it will take for students who have run into a learning gap to recover from the impact of the pandemic on their learning? And is it even possible to predict that? Could it be a year? Could it be, you know, well through their academic careers?
You know, I wish I could predict that, and I wouldn't even attempt to do so. I'm hopeful that, you know, as we get into a regular routine of a normal school year like this year, that we can close that gap. and try to get back to, you know, better than hopefully pre-pandemic levels, because I think, you know, we had work to do pre-pandemic as well. But I think it's hard to really predict, and I don't think anyone can sit and say, well, if you do this or you do that, that you'll be able to close the gap much quicker, because, you know, I think it really depends on the circumstances, you know, and the child.
Michael Testani is the superintendent of Bridgeport Public Schools. Superintendent Testani, thanks so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me. Have a great day.
Certainly, you too. Also, this note, Superintendent Testani will be leaving his position with the city of Bridgeport in November. He will next become the superintendent for the Fairfield School District. Are you aware of a learning gap due to the pandemic? Tell us what you know. Tell us about it. You can email us at tfs@wshu.org. We're on Twitter as well at FullStoryWSHU. It's our program for today, produced by Fatou Sangare, Sophie Camizzi, and senior producer Ann Lopez. I'm Tom Kuser. Thank you for listening to The Full Story.